writing.
Welcome to PDGA Radio with Grant Zellner and Jennifer Allen, hot on the heels of a really intriguing announcement just made less than a week ago here at the PDGA about the launch of the new official disc golf world rankings. And with Jennifer and I today is Mark Brody of Sport Edge and Columbia Business School. Mark, thanks for joining us. I'll save the particulars of why you're with us, but first I'll give you a chance just to say hello.
Well, thanks, Grant and Jennifer. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's really fun for me to get to learn more about disc golf.
Now, at PDGA.com, there is an article that came out last Wednesday announcing this incredible platform, this official disc golf world ranking, and in it, you get to know Mark just a little bit for the fact that Mark was part of the development of this mechanism, for lack of a better term. He comes over from having done the same in the world of traditional golf, ball golf, or whatever else you want to call it to try to distinct it from our sport. The official world golf rankings are a pretty incredible product in themselves, in that they are used by all of the top level golf tours around the world, including the PGA Tour. So, Mark, you applied experience and knowledge from that process, brought it into this world, and here we are today. I don't really know where to start other than maybe starting there. And for you, what was that experience like?
Oh, the experience has been incredible. Came across the PDGA by Steve West, who read an article that I wrote for the Wall Street Journal about the official world golf rankings last February. So it was almost a year ago to the day. And so he reached out, and I get a lot of emails from a lot of people. And some of it is like, yeah, I don't know if this person is real or not. And anyway, you know the email pile that sort of comes, but it seemed like a legitimate email. so I reached back out to Steve, and he said, you know, he was part of this working group for revising the PDGA rankings, and we had a conversation, and then one thing led to another, and I had formed this company jointly with Dylan Byrne called Sport Edge to do golf analytics type projects like this. So it was another sort of example of being in the right place at the right time. And golf analytics is something that I've been living for and with the last probably 15 or so years of my life. And before the official world golf rankings, I created a metric called strokes gained, which is used on the PGA Tour, used by amateur golfers and all sorts of consumer-based apps. But one thing led to another, and basically looking at how do you measure performance, both at the micro level, like shot by shot, and also the macro level, more recently with ranking players. And the other thing relative to ranking that I've been involved with is the NCAA college golf rankings. So that's been an ongoing project, which was just started again this 2023-2024 college season. And so there's a lot of similarities, but certainly some interesting differences as well.
Before that time, had you heard of disc golf, or was this your first introduction to this sport?
So I certainly heard about disc golf, but it really wasn't on my radar because I'd never seen a course. I'd never seen people play. So it was more something that I heard about, you know, that was over there. And I was surprised, and I'd say pleasantly surprised, when I heard like how big a deal this is. You know, I think of, you know, golf is kind of a niche sport within the American or, you know, global sport ecosystem. There's, you know, depending on how you measure it, like NFL football is at the top, and then maybe you have basketball and baseball, and golf is somewhere that's quite a bit smaller, ball golf, that is, quite a bit smaller, depending on how you measure it. In terms of participation, though, right, if you look at viewership, whatever, or how many people go to a golf tournament, it's certainly very, very healthy, but it's not the same as how many people in a given year go to Major League Baseball games, right? There's thousands more. But in terms of participation, people don't actually play when you get to, you know, 35, 40, 50 years old. They don't actually play football, tackle football. They don't do that. So, but they do play golf. And I was just amazed to learn, like, a million plus, I don't even know exactly what the number is, PDGA members. It's like, this is a really big deal. And that was a surprise to me, but a pleasant surprise.
And you come into the world of disc golf and dive into it from maybe a different angle. Most people get into disc golf because they're at the right park at the right time. Maybe someone playing walks near where they're picnicking and a conversation happens. And the next thing you know, a frisbee is in their hand or, you know, a disc golf disc, a literal one, is in their hand and they throw it and sort of catch the bug. You come into it specifically from the angle of exploring this sport statistically and trying to work out a, I would assume, sort of a, at least from a number standpoint, a comparable product to what you'd already built for golf. As you did that, did you find some surprising similarities in terms of how the data worked? Did you find some surprising differences? I mean, it is golf. There is an object going to a hole, or in our case, a basket from a tee pad. But other than that, things can get either very similar or very different. What stand out to you?
What stood out to me more were the similarities than the differences. And when you're talking about developing a ranking system, there's different ways that you can go about it that we can get into, but some of them are somewhat misunderstood. But the mathematical underpinnings of a good ranking system for ball golf would also apply to tennis and to Formula One racing and to other sports. So when you take a look at how this could be applied to many sports, disc golf is actually very, very similar to ball golf. So the similarities are striking, more so than the differences. Like I said, if you can rank tennis players, and that's, I would say, quite different than golf. So you got to make some transformation. You know, the scoring is different. All sorts of things are different about tennis compared to golf. But disc golf and ball golf, when it gets down to the scores, it's similar. When you have, you know, the four majors is similar, and you have different strengths of field, and the mathematical challenges of developing kind of a fair and accurate, transparent ranking system are the same in those sports. But when you have scores that are divided into holes and into rounds, and multiple rounds form an event, and then multiple events form a season, that part is very, very, very similar.
Did you find you had to make any adjustments, though, from what you perhaps expected to? In other words, did you see some anomalies in the statistics where you had to weight, say, the value of a victory or the value of a top five or a top 10 or the value of a major win as compared to a regular, for lack of a better term, win? Did you find anything there where you said, okay, this is where disc golf is different and I need to weigh things a little bit differently?
Yes. And so one of the things with the official World Golf Rankings, it was trying to improve a system that was wearing a straitjacket. So the straitjacket in the official World Golf Rankings was, what I'd say is fixed points per finish position. So a winner would get 100 points, second place 60, third place 40. And the change that we made in August 2022 was to make sure the total points awarded across different strengths of field was equitable. But you can't kind of within that fixed points per position system do things as accurately as possible. Whereas if you remove that constraint and say, I'm going to let stroke differences matter, I'm going to allow more points awarded or more credit given for a bigger margin of victory, then you can develop a different but better and more accurate ranking system. And that's what we did. So I'd say there's two kind of objectives. One is you want to have a mathematically fair, accurate, unbiased, transparent ranking system. But within that objective, there's a lot of choices to be made. And those choices aren't black and white, like here's a right answer, here's a wrong answer. So what you're mentioning is like, how much should majors be worth compared to other elite series events that have a comparable field? So imagine a major with certain list of players, and then this other thing, which is not a major, with the same exact players.
Yeah.
So if you're like just a mathematician that doesn't think about the real world, you say, oh, they should be treated the same. But no way should they be treated the same. But how you treat majors differently is where myself and my colleague at Sport Edge, Dylan Byrne, spent many, many hours with Pete Crist and also with Todd Lyon about what made sense for the relative weights of the different majors and majors versus other events. And so we did extensive testing of different, you know, parameters or configurations in order to get that right, you know, again, with the, you know, mainly the direction of Pete and Todd, and then later running it by this, this working group. So like I said, there's no like right and wrong answer, but there are things that are going to make sense to you. and I'm going to rely on the experts in the disc golf world to help me out there.
Like, how do you put stress into numbers?
Yeah, so that's actually, you know, one of the reasons for giving a major premium is because, you know, you're not all out there wearing heart rate monitors and saying, well, let's give more points for the highest heart rate as well as the lowest score, right? You just know that in history, majors matter more. And when you think of the best players in the sports, accomplishments are, you know, how many majors did you win? How many other events did you win? Then how many top fives or top tens? And you sort of want to blend all that together, but in the right way. And you can't just come up with a ranking system based on major wins, right? You're going to have four people in the year. And then how do you rank the other, you know, 100, 200, 300 people if you just say, we're going to only count major wins? So you can't do that. So then you say, okay, well, I've got to count wins and I've got to count these other finishes. Oh, well, now how do you compare those two? And then you say, okay, well, now how do I compare a 10th in a major with a 5th in this elite series? Which one of those is better? So you very quickly, you're indirectly putting in, you know, pressure and history and performance and accomplishment and blending that all together.
And you said there was a way that you could calculate more points now, like if you had a dominating win, say you were just on fire that week and won by 15, that was more points than if you just won in a playoff.
Correct. Correct. And like I said, there's different choices that you can make. And that seemed reasonable, but it's also a way to fairly reward performances in events that have very different strengths of field. Mm-hmm. So
sure.
You need to take into account, or it's more accurate to take into account different strengths of field with stroke differentials, which is what this allows the current system does.
And on top of that, this goes back a certain length of time. In our case, the case of the official disc golf world rankings, 104 weeks, essentially 2 years worth of events with, correct me if I'm wrong, more recent events matter more, or at least impact a player's score more. They still impact your score going back that 2 years before they fall off.
Right.
So any given week, a player might have a good performance, but it's 2 years old now, fall off. And so you get that kind of jockeying for position on the leaderboard happening as well when it comes to weighting last week's finish compared to, say, last year's finish.
Exactly. And that's another one where there isn't a right answer. So you can, most people would say, though, that equally weighting. So there's two questions. How far back do you go? Do you want it just to be 3 months, 6 months? That kind of seems too short. Mm-hmm. Even a year probably seems too short. 5 years seems too long. But the question of, you know, where between, say, 9 months and 2, 3, 4 years is the right amount of information to take? And you want to trade off people that are on the, you know, the twilight of their career versus up and comers. And you want to balance those things. So once you have a time frame, which we settled on after, again, much experimentation, 2 years, there's still the question of how much do you want this year to matter compared to the previous year or the most recent 3 months versus the oldest 3 months. And again, it kind of seems like you want what's top of mind, what's current performance to matter more than 2-year-old performance.
Yeah.
And so we give, you know, much more weight to things that have happened in the most recent 6 months, and then less from 6 months to a year, less from a year to a year and a half, and then even less from a year and a half to two. And that sort of embodies what I think most people want, which is they want more recent performance to count more. It doesn't preclude using this system to come up with a player of the year where you just take the year worth and you don't weight anything. So that's a separate issue. But you mentioned events falling off. Well, when you weight things less as they recede into the past, then at this 2-year cutoff, you don't have some event that's going to cause a drastic change in the rankings. It's going to be much smoother.
Oh, I see.
So what you don't want to have happen really is 2 years later, this major win falls off and the person's ranking jumps and they didn't, you know, nothing really happened other than 1 week went by.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that we looked at a lot, which was not only how do the rankings look like now, but how do they move throughout the course of a season or across seasons?
Someone that comes to mind to me is Paige Pierce. So she was gone almost an entire season from a major injury. This will be her first, you know, this is her first weekend back. So something like that, where a player has an injury or something happens where they take a year off, would that be more of a drastic change that we would see a player all of a sudden come back or vice versa, you know, have an injury and fall off?
Yeah, so that's part of the, again, sort of the design choices and how much do you want to either reward somebody that just appears on the horizon. So imagine this hypothetical scenario where you've got some player who just turns pro and in their first event they go out and they win a major. Okay, so they have one event where they performed exceptionally well under their belt, but you want that player now to be number one in the world after one event. And probably the answer is no. On the other hand, you realize this was a great performance, and the question is, how much do you want to put in? And so this is the difference between looking at total performance versus average performance. And you can make an argument for both. Total performance is, you know, what did you do over the time period? And it all accumulates. Well, that just rewards somebody that just plays more and more. And you don't want to just do that. On the other hand, if you say, no, total doesn't make sense, let's do an average. Well, average doesn't make sense with this player that just wins their first event. Now their average is as high as it could possibly be, but they've only played one event. So neither is exactly right. So we have a balance between the two. It's actually an average point system, but the way you give a balance is you have a minimum divisor so that if you don't play enough events, your average goes down because let's say your minimum divisor is 10 and you play one event. So instead of having an average of 100, you divide that by 10 and now your average points is 10 until you play 10 events. And so there's this notion of everybody's got to play a minimum number of events to get full credit. So it's a balance between wanting to have players have a portfolio of a certain number of events and not penalizing somebody too much for injuries. But on the other hand, you don't want somebody to take 9 months off and just, you know, sit on a good ranking doing that. So again, there's a trade-off, and that's what we spent hours and hours going over with Pete and Todd, trying to get that balance right.
So in disc golf, is this, we talked about majors and elite series. With the PDGA, are these numbers going all the way down to like our local C tiers, B tier events? Are they calculating in any event that you've played?
They aren't currently. The system could be used to go as far down as you want, but currently they're not. And I think part of that was, you know, it's a new system, and let's get this right, and then think about how to continue on in the future later. But there's nothing sort of in the system that wouldn't work with including more and more of these events. But also the focus was kind of on the top 100.
Again, well, and they would definitely be weighted totally different. Like you were talking about the weights and importance. I mean, definitely some smaller events are not going to have the points that a major or even an A tier, you know, if you're comparing just a C tier and an A tier, because typically the level of players changes for most of those events.
And that's one of the, you know, tough things that we try to do, which is fairly measure the different strengths of field. So even within, you know, elite series or A series, whatever, you still want to differentiate the stronger versus the weaker events. Sort of going further down to B's or C's, that's just a continuation of the same phenomenon. Yeah.
Marcus, you got to the testing phase of this. Did you start to plug in maybe years, historical years? Maybe you went back 5 years and took the results from that year, plugged it in, and then perhaps looked to people like Pete and Todd Line and said, does this check out? You know, our scoring says that the best player that year was so-and-so. Was it really so? And, you know, that kind of thing, was that happening? And through that process, did you maybe get to know a few players? Maybe you didn't ever meet them personally, but you got to know a name or a couple of names. Did that happen for you?
Yeah. So we both looked at the rankings, like, which is like a time slice, but we also looked at the evolution of the rankings. And when a player wins a tournament, how much do they jump up? If they have some bad finishes, how fast do they fall? So we looked at many, many, graphs and charts of how, you know, players were ranked and how they moved. And it was sort of fascinating. And yeah, like I got to learn about Paul McBeth, and it was, you know, fantastic. Kristen Tartar, if I pronounce her name right. I was thinking, you know, they're like the Tiger Woods and the Annika Sorenstam of ball golf. I mean, you see how well they performed and the gap. So we're not only just looking at the difference, you know, who's ranked first, second, third, fourth, but you take a look at the gaps between those numbers. And, you know, Kristen, for example, has twice the points of number two, Owen Scoggins. So, and, you know, talking to Pete, does that make sense? Is she really that good? But we can look at her performance and, it was just fun to learn about these. And then, seeing that Jennifer is co-hosting the radio show, I said, let me take a look there. And she's ranked 12 currently in the world, which is awfully impressive, Jennifer.
Thank you very much. I was unaware of that as well. previously was 18th. So I don't know. I mean, I am now playing full time. So looking at stats previously and how we were talking about things changing, you know, I had a career in healthcare. So with our sport growing, I was able to step back from that and focus on this a little bit more. And I would assume that's a reason for a small jump, which is awesome. And a little motivation.
Yeah. Very impressive.
But I mean, looking at Kristen's, I mean, how often do we have players win a Grand Slam? You know, she was coming off a Grand Slam winning season. So I personally think seeing that large of a gap, you know, is kind of to be, you know, expected. I did see a few remarks going like, how could she be double, you know, better than the others? But that was a pretty remarkable year that we might not ever see, you know, again, because our talent and the golfers just continues to rise. So accomplishments and years like that, I feel like are going to be fewer and far between.
Well, that's another nice thing about this kind of ranking system is the stories that it produces. And so Kristen, like you said, is an example of that. But you can then think about historically, you know, who got the most points in a season and who was the fastest riser and who held the number one spot for the longest period of time. Yeah. And, you know, week in and week out, you're going to see ranking changes. And it's fun to kind of look and see, well, who's moving up and by how much and what did they do that? And I think it just adds a lot more interest and excitement around the sport, which is great.
Well, and I think the number one thing that we are going to learn over the next just few weeks even is how volatile, for lack of another word, these rankings are. And I'm just trying to express how much, say, a win or a top five may bump a player, how much missing a week, for example, due to injury or due to just a player choosing their schedule strategically for themselves and not playing in a certain event. You know, what kind of an impact will that have on, say, them going down? Or that's going to be something we are all going to learn together over the course of the next, say, month or two. You may already know, Mark, exactly yeah. how those things are going to happen, but the rest of us will get to see it in real time as we watch our favorite players, as we watch storylines develop for this season. And that's going to be, I think, very, very compelling and a great talking point moving forward. I know, Mark, you have a hard stop and I want to be respectful of your time. Are there any other elements of this ranking that you feel like the average Joe, like say myself, it would just be nice for me to know as I watch this product, you as the developer, this is your baby. Is there any other detail you think it would be nice for me to know it would enhance my enjoyment and experience of the product?
So this isn't a direct answer to the question because we haven't gone back so far, but I thought it was interesting to see. We went back to September 21, which means we went 2 years before that. In the time from then until now, there have been three number one ranked male players. Can you guess who the three were?
I would have to guess Paul McBeth is one of them. Yes. For sure.
Yep.
Would Ricky be one of them? Ricky Wysocki?
I would yes. guess Ricky.
Yes.
Okay, but now it gets interesting. The third.
My guess would be between Calvin and Isaac.
Calvin, you got it.
Okay.
Okay, so there have been two number one ranked women. So you got those three. Two number one ranked women. Who were they?
I would have to say Kristen and Missy.
We know Kristen because that's yep. current.
Yeah. And Missy but Gannon. Missy Gannon.
Paige Pierce.
Kind of taking into consideration her taking so much time off would have dropped her down. But over 2 years, yes, she was previously. That makes sense.
I was thinking too far into it. there were nine top five players, which include Missy Gannon. So she was certainly in the top five.
Very consistent. Very consistent.
Well, and it's making me think of other players that maybe almost got there if you cut out the right, you know, season in their career, like a Chris Dickerson at a certain point, I would expect had quite a spike. Not that he's not high ranked today, too. I'm just saying at a certain point around, say, Champions Cup a couple of years ago, I would expect that he got awfully close and several other players. I would expect at one point or another, if you just took the right slice of results, you'd see quite a spike there.
Yeah. So there were 8 top 5 players over the last few years, and it includes Chris Dickerson, Isaac Robertson, Eagle McMahon, Matt Oram, Gannon Burr. So, you were naming the ones exactly that had, you know, a good period, but not quite enough to get to number one, but were certainly top 5 players and had some very good, you know, stretches.
And what I think we see right now, looking at the, and this maybe is a great place to finish our conversation, looking at the first iteration of these rankings, that is at the moment of this broadcasted podcast, less than a week old, you see what I would describe as some relative parity in the MPO side. You see some gaps, a lot of expected players perhaps, but some gaps on the FPO side, which to me suggests that on the FPO side, you could see a lot of movement, especially early on the MPO side. You see maybe an opportunity for a player to perhaps separate themselves from the pack. And all of those storylines might reveal themselves, in your opinion, Mark, fairly quickly, or will it take some time?
It depends, you know, on the schedule. Basically, you're going to get more movement the more important the events or the stronger the fields. And so it really is kind of schedule dependent. And so the stronger fields will give you more movement than the weaker fields, typically. But the majors will give you even more movement, but I think there's going to be a lot of interesting storylines, and nobody's got number one locked up now for the end of the season. So a lot certainly can happen.
So with the women being able to have our first major next month, we may see a little more movement in our schedule before the men will.
Yeah. And it could be that Kristen is still number one, but you can see, like Grant was saying, you could see that gap shrink, and you can see the others, in sniffing number one, but maybe not getting there.
Well, and we have several, and I keep speaking of the FPO side of it, obviously. There's a lot of us like number two, Owen Scoggins, who plays both Masters and Open. Does that take away or add to anything when we're playing multiple divisions?
We use all the events that sort of count for the ranking go in. And like I said, so it doesn't, we adjust for the strength of the field. And so all the events that are like countable or official for the rankings, they go in, and the other ones that you were mentioning before don't. So I think they're given kind of their proper weight in this system.
And Jennifer, I think to answer your question, this goes back to your earlier comment. This year, Elite Series events, Disc Golf Pro Tour events, both in the United States and in Europe, are counted. The majors are obviously counted. The potential of counting other events, say, for example, A-tiers, for example, or a certain maybe menu, for lack of a better term, of other events, the potential is there. And those could be concluded in a future iteration of the rankings. But for the time being, it's already been announced that at least for 2024, the sort of menu of events that will be counted has already been selected. So that's a good thing from the standpoint of we all know what counts and what maybe doesn't. But it's also a good thing that we know that certain things could count in the future. And that might only bring more names and more opportunities to more players that maybe choose to play slightly different schedules, but they'll still get counted. So that could be another thing that could be fun as this matures and evolves as a product, the official Disc Golf World Rankings. Well, Mark, again, I'm trying to be as respectful as I can of your time. I know you've got things to get to. We really appreciate that. This was even more enlightening than I thought it would be. And I thought it would be enlightening. So this has been a lot of fun. And I appreciate not only your time today, but the time it must have taken to put this together with all of your colleagues. Please pass my thanks along to them.
I certainly will. And nice seeing you, Grant, in video form anyway. And Jennifer, nice meeting you as well.
Nice to meet you. Hopefully we'll see you on the course someday.
Great. I look forward to it.
Take care.